Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast. On this podcast, we try to learn something new about an industry which will, in a few years, affect the lives of us all.
Hey!
Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about different topics. Steven is going to talk about how did we arrive to Ethereum Classic. I will be talking about the news, in particular focusing on the SEC and their latest tantrums. And Dimi is going to talk about the random topic of the week.
A surprise one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm actually attending an event that's called Blockchain, that is organized by Blockchain for Belgium. That's where I live. And they're going to do some, they're going to make some proposals to, or do some proposals, make some proposals and do them, post them to the Belgian government. And I was on there talking with people, and suddenly somebody shared a history lesson, which I completely forgot about. And I don't know if people, well, if you're in the space for quite some time, you will remember that before AI was a big thing, in blockchain, DAOs were a very, very big thing. And DAOs are decentralized autonomous organizations, which basically means it's a new management structure where you let people who are participating in the blockchain vote in a certain way, and you kind of automize how proposals are being done, how something is being run, and you're basically changing management with code. And so one of the first DAOs was created on Ethereum. And the DAO on Ethereum intended to act as an investor-directed venture capital firm, to replace centralized management with investor stakeholders who can then vote. And people could start buying ETH and stake it. And after, on the 30th of April in 2016, the token sale started, and it raised $150 million worth of Ethereum, which was at that time the biggest crowdfunding that was ever done. And
when was that? Sorry to interrupt. Just when was that?
2016, the 30th of April. Yeah. And so after approving a couple of funding proposals, stakeholders were then meant to be in a position to profit from their investments. So it was basically a VC firm, but on the blockchain, that was run with people who are stakeholders. And so by dividing the dividends or benefiting from a token price increase, due to representation in ownership of a successful company that the VC DAO had invested in, you could actually make money. Now, there were a couple of vulnerabilities in the DAO's wallet, in the smart contract, and it was exploited.
Smart contract exploded.
That hasn't happened yet. Let's hope that that we never see the day. But so, there was a vulnerability that was exploited, and $60 million worth of ETH were stolen.
Back in 2016,
yes,
a lot of money.
yeah. That was my next
point.
I was going to say. Yeah, the big problem was that 14% of all available ETH was in those wallets at the time. So the survival of the DAO meant the survival of ETH as a whole. So the ecosystem was in danger. And so first, there were a couple of, everybody started problem solving. And the first thing they proposed was a soft fork. And that was proposed by Vitalik, the founder of ETH himself. But there was a bug in the update code. So a second solution was proposed, a hard fork. Now, the hard fork effectively rolled back the Ethereum network's history to before the DAO attack and reallocated the DAO's Ether. Now, this means that we are going to just delete a part of the blockchain history and just go back to this one major major, major point. And so, yeah, everybody who's in blockchain knows that is exactly the opposite of what blockchain was made for. It actually shouldn't really be possible. But because it was the early days, that was the proposal. And the hard fork was ultimately chosen as a viable path, and there were votes. Now, the when the hard fork would have been implemented, the DAO's Ether would then be reallocated to a different smart contract so that investors could just withdraw their funds, and that would be the end. Now, it was extremely controversial because blockchains are supposed to be immutable and censorship resistant. And so that was like a big, big problem. That's why not everybody was on board, of course. And after a heated debate on public forums and the like, on July the 20th in 2016, at block 192,000, I checked, the Ethereum's hard fork was implemented. But not everybody was on board because of the controversiality of,
going against basically the whole philosophy of using blockchain. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But because not everybody was on board and it was a hard fork, they had this new coin that had to be named. And then Ethereum Classic was born. So that's where Ethereum Classic comes from. And so the decision to do a hard fork is the reason Ethereum Classic exists, but also, and that's the most important part, the reason why Ethereum survived and is now the second biggest coin on the blockchain.
It's curious, you know, if the second biggest coin in the blockchain was the one who it didn't violate, but it went against one of the basic principles of blockchain, which is its immutability.
Yeah, but that was back in the day.
That doesn't count. That doesn't really count. Do you know how it was exploited back then, the hack, or how were
they
able to
steal? No, I have no idea. I'm not an IT guy, so I wouldn't understand probably. If people know, please let us know in comments or send something to us or whatever. I can dig deeper if people are interested. So if there's a big reaction, I'll go into that.
On the top of my head.
Yeah.
Good question, actually.
One of the reasons why Ethereum is the biggest now is because after this, it was clear that blockchains aren't inherently immutable. And so that's why it's now one of the biggest or the most distributed blockchains ever, which is why the security is now...
They learned from this, basically.
Yeah. Which is a good lesson to learn early on.
definitely. Yeah. When was Ethereum created again? 2004. I want to say 2014. Let me just check. Ethereum Classic, 2015?
Nope.
2015
for Ethereum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So one year. Cool.
Yeah. No idea. And I didn't know this, but that's also the first time a DAO hack occurred.
It's funny because we talk about DAOs. I mean, this year, I feel like last year, 2022, was a lot about DAOs. There was a huge hype around it, but very interesting to know that it was actually that was part of the very early developments of Ethereum. So nothing new.
No, it's all bigger, better, right? Mm-hmm. And most stuff needs like an episode of exploits, tinkering, restructuring, reworking, and then redeploying. So,
yeah.
But I thought it was really interesting because I was like, what? A DAO hack? Yeah.
Cool.
Thanks for sharing.
I love to be the history teacher. No problem.
Okay. I'm going to be the news anchor if you're the history teacher.
Okay, let's go.
So I think that maybe, I think both of you know already that Do Kwon was arrested in Montenegro.
Oh no.
Last week. Yeah. Why did you say, oh no? It's actually good news.
Oh no. Oh yes.
Yeah. It's pretty cool news. So curious to see what's going to happen. Montenegro doesn't have any extradition accord with South Korea. So he might have to go to Serbia first and then to South Korea. Very curious what's going to happen. But this is old story because everything, all of this is kind of related to last summer, right? However, I was in shock when I discovered that the SEC decided to sue one of my favorite artists.
Alicia Keys?
No. Okay, I was thinking maybe it's an overstatement to call him one of my favorite artists, but Akon.
Akon, oh, no.
Yeah. Akon and others, I think there were 8 celebrities, among them also Soulja Boy. You.
Oh my God, no.
I know, you. I know.
Me.
Him, this guy, many, many, many other artists. And that's because...
6 to be precise.
And this is because these guys promoted the use of TRX without reporting that they were actually being paid to do so. So, the SEC...
TRX or FTX?
Yeah, Tron. No, TRX.
Tron.
Yeah, and Tronix, the currency on the Tron blockchain. So basically, just as a reminder for those who don't know, the Tron blockchain is based on digital. It's a blockchain-based digital platform that primarily hosts entertainment applications. So it makes sense that they would reach out to these superstars that are really big in the entertainment industry. And Tronix is the currency running on the Tron blockchain. And it's the 31st cryptocurrency in market cap currently. So it's quite a huge one, right? And basically Tron was created as a challenger for giants in the entertainment like Amazon, Netflix. And they want to decentralize the web. And Justin Sun, he's himself the CEO of BitTorrent. So basically he was running this campaign with these huge celebrities in order to promote Tron and Tronix without disclosing that he was paying them. So this is something that the SEC doesn't like. So they sued everyone. And 6 out of the 8 celebrities paid over almost $500,000 to the SEC.
Oh, no. They got paid a couple of million to promote something and they had to pay $500,000 of fines, those poor celebrities.
Keep in mind, it's $500,000 collectively.
Oh no.
So, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh my God, this is so ridiculous. Love it. I love it.
They paid in order to settle the charges and not to go to court and to kind bury this. But we are here to unbury this.
Yes. Do you know this meme? There's this clown and he puts his clown vision goggles on and he's like, nothing has changed. And I agree with him. What a clown world. I love it.
I don't know how much they were paid, though, because I just know that Soulja Boy, for instance, he got paid $10,000 for one tweet. Then I don't know how many tweets he made, but yeah, I think this is
If you hire Akon, you definitely pay him more than $10,000. Like, I can imagine it being a lot of money.
Yeah, this makes me think there's this, in the FTX trial, there's also influencers that were recently, and I think the word is indicted, although I'm not legal. I don't know the legal speak. I think indicted, but for, you know, doing the same thing for FTX. And one of them, I thought they said he got paid $25,000 every time he said FTX.
What?
Need to become an influencer, guys. Listeners, please go to my Facebook or YouTube. We need to get big. We want to shill coins, please. Yeah, but first we have to move to America, because if you're in the EU and you get indicted, then it's a bit worse. A bit.
We have high values, so you better have a high price for us also.
Actually, why am I always the one talking about influencers? Like last time I was talking about Logan Paul.
It's your track. But hey, don't you think that it's also similar to the
I'm the scandal girl.
Yeah.
The
NFT,
the Apes NFT. The yeah.
What? Bored Ape Yacht Club?
Exactly, the Bored Ape Yacht Club, the Yuga Labs. There was this scandal that for example, give free NFTs to celebrities, and then the celebrities post them, but they don't say that they got it for free. So it seems like they bought it like 50 Ethereum or 100 Ethereum.
True.
But no, it's a clown world. Everywhere it's a clown
exactly,
world.
Exactly. It's there. Exactly the same. It's exactly the same situation.
It's not a clown world. It's a new technology in early development. Okay.
Clown vision on. Nothing has changed. I love nothing it. I love this kind of stuff because I don't know. It's just so ridiculous. You can't make the shit up.
Yeah, and it leads perfectly into your topic, I think, no?
Yeah, yo. So
Random stuff
with Timmy. I was thinking, you know, blockchain is really cool. I support the technology. I think it's something that is going to shape the future. But I was thinking, you know, everything has a good and bad side, right? If it only has a good side, then apparently you have not explored the bad side of it.
That's how I roll. I see no disadvantage.
Stella is like, I see no disadvantages in this. There are no disadvantages.
This seems perfect to me. At least it looks perfect so far. So far, so good.
The journalist with morals. Oh, it's all perfect.
There are no two sides. So I wanted to discuss the topic with you. Apparently, right now, it's difficult to say, right? It has advantages and disadvantages. I think it's even more fun if you imagine it in 100 years, like in the future. I want to hear your opinion on a dystopian and then a utopian blockchain future. I read some super interesting Reddit threads. Like, people are quite imaginative, and there are cases for both, like very extreme cases. But first of all, I would love to hear your opinion. Then I'm going to jump with what I've read.
Okay, should we start with the utopian? Because I think it's easier.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay. Should I go first?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Ladies first.
Okay, so in the utopian future, in 100 years, everyone owns their own assets. And there's
impossible.
No huge...
No, that's it's not utopian, that's impossible. sorry.
Everyone owns their own assets. Everyone is, I think, mostly about the creators, right? Creators can monetize their creation in a more fair way. They don't have to go through middlemen. And everyone is happy. There is no war. there is no conflict at all.
Okay, what is there something more blockchain
no, okay. related? Yeah. Okay, I know. Listen, how cool if we could use our blockchain to record all of our conversations so that there is no arguments. Because we can just go back to that conversation that we had on that day, and it's immutable. No one can
Girl,
tamper with this.
It makes me sad that this is the best you can think of in a utopian future. In 100 years, you said your idea of a utopian future in 100 years is that people are going to be able to record their conversations.
I have no imagination. I'm
and
sorry.
Besides, that was world peace and what?
It's called Twitter. It already exists.
Okay, whatever. Steven, go ahead. I'm looking forward to hear what you're gonna say.
So. I'm gonna take a different approach. So blockchain is this cool technology with pros and cons, and you have a utopian version and you have a dystopian version. Now, the cool thing is, for the dystopian version, you don't need blockchain. Right? it can make things worse, but you don't need it, right? All right. In a utopian version, where, you know, we have peace and people are about their own self exploration and not materialistic and stuff like that, I think you need technology like blockchain, because in my opinion, there needs to be some, for example, resource divider. We have finite resources and they need to be used in the best possible way, but you can only do this if you allocate this finite resource in a right and correct way. And you cannot do that if you have one person or one government that is going to allocate it, because it's going to be messy. What you need is clear rules and a technology-driven approach, like an AI that can determine whether something is, you know, good to allocate or not. And you can't do that without blockchain, because otherwise, in between the processes, things could change. You know, the whole reason, or one of the biggest use cases for blockchain now, is the supply chain, you know. And I think for that, as well as autonomous governments and all of that, I think you need blockchain. And so I think that the development of blockchain is actually, if we can fight the bad forces, some tool that we actually needed to move ahead and move forward.
I would
disagree with you on this one, because I think if you distribute resources, centralized government, nothing beats it. It's the most efficient way. It's the most clear way. I think it's much more messy with blockchain, but there are specific advantages of the layup, I think, around this or apart from this. But what were you going to say, Stella?
I think that this is not ideal. This is not utopian at all. This is very realistic.
You don't record your conversations in your idea of utopia, Steven. So,
I'm talking about a blockchain that has developed like a couple of hundred, maybe a thousand years, right? Not the blockchain we're seeing today. So yeah. I think at least the principle behind the technology, trustless.
No, I think it's pretty cool. I think you argumented to yourself, okay? And
but where is world peace, Steven?
World peace. Shush, people.
That comes before you implement the resource stuff, because that's not going to happen on its own.
So here's my opinion of a more utopian future. I think a more utopian future with blockchain is, first of all, technology that impacts the way people think. I think right now we live in a future that has made us very slow. In a way that we don't take responsibility over our own things. Mm-hmm. We expect banks to take care of us, the government to take care of us. I think France is really cool as a country because people are very active in policy. So you would see people protest all the time. But I don't think that's everywhere in the world. And to be honest, for me, for a good future for humanity, people just need to be activated so they can be interested in what's happening in the world. And if they don't agree with the policies, they take actions. And that's what blockchain gives you, right? The power to take action. First of all, you're accountable for your own finances. Second of all, the government has no access to your money, which, you know, in some countries, it's pretty cool. And third of all, you kind of gain a little bit more self-responsibility. I think we need that. I think we lost that in the 20th century, especially the second half after the Second World War, with the growing amount of automation, specialization of people. I think it has made us extremely lazy in thinking. So we're extremely efficient in doing things, but if you put us in a situation where we have to think, we're not used to thinking anymore. We kind of expect to type something on the computer to search it. And I think that's going to get even worse with ChatGPT, with AI. We have to think less and less and less, and we just think in keywords. And I really hope that blockchain kind of pushes us the other direction of being self-responsible and kind of forcing you to grow and to think. So that's one of the things that I hope, you know, I see in 100 years stop in future, people who are motivated, people, for example, who are part of DAOs, or you can, for example, decide where your taxes get allocated through the blockchain. So it makes you much more involved in what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my aspects for utopian future. The other one would be more concentration on the regional level. So instead, right now, everything is centralized, so all the money is going to one place and then it gets redistributed again. But to be honest, I would love to see more communities come up. So for example, your neighborhood, they want to install solar energy, but they want to finance it themselves. They want to split the profit between themselves. They want to have control over this. I think blockchain allows you for that. And I think that's cool. This kind of just creation of communities. So those are two aspects of the utopian future that I could see. For example.
And I can see that you're the one who is the most prepared to answer this question. I'm feeling so ashamed right now with my answers. Like, what the hell? I said recording conversation.
I know. I swear to God. You were so enthusiastic to start. You were like, world of peace and no more hunger. Yo, also on the no more hunger.
However, sorry.
No, do say first.
if I had to add on the things I said earlier, one major aspect, two actually, the most important things in the world for me, education and anti-corruption. I think that this is something that I'm super looking forward to see with blockchain. People educating themselves, empowering themselves, and different communities having access to what we have here and consider for granted.
Anti-corruption, I'm all with you. I also think that if it's implemented, anti-corruption is one of the best benefits I see of blockchain.
Yeah.
Also, it's a deflationary tool, right? I read a really interesting post. It was like, right now, almost every currency in the world is inflationary, right? So best case scenario, you lose 2% of your money per year. Like if it's the best case scenario, worst case scenario, you lose 10. So it incentivizes you to spend, right? You spend your money, otherwise they lose value. But with a deflationary currency, it would more inspire you not to spend your money for things that you don't need, right? You want to hold your money and you would rather spend it on things that you really need. Yeah, a slower economy. I don't think a fast economy is that good in the long term. Maybe in like a short term perspective, but in the long term, I think it's going to fuck us up. So that's my opinion on the utopian one. Before I switch to dystopian, do you also want to say something else, Steven? Because Stella butched in.
No, not really. Yeah. Actually, the only thing I wanted to say was that when you talked about more involvement and the redistribution of the money to regions or within regions, that's basically the second part of what I said, like you need government to be, you need blockchain in government. And for me, when I say blockchain in government, then I always mean like a more direct democracy, more influence by people, less by corporations, you know, and anti-corruption as well. So I think we kind of agree on like some of the basic parts. Yeah.
All right. Dystopian is more fun. It's also more difficult because then you go a little bit more into film scenarios. And I think it deserves an episode on itself. But some of the most interesting things that I read as a dystopian future is this destabilization of countries. So right now, there's money in circulation, right? Even if you keep your money in the bank, it is in circulation. Like the bank uses it for something, the government uses it for something, everybody uses your money, everybody uses the common money. If you put your money and don't stake it, like just, you know, buy some Bitcoin, buy some Ethereum, buy Solana and keep it aside, this money stops being in circulation completely, which is something super interesting. Like, what does that mean for us? So there was a really good Reddit post. It was like, what happens in 100 years? The United States and Europe, first of all, a large part of the money is not in circulation anymore. People use it for it to gain value because it's deflationary, it depreciates with time. So nobody spends anymore that much. The military budget has reduced a lot because governments cannot afford it anymore. Also, there's a liquidity crisis in most governments because, again, the old system does not work. China, however, has prospered a lot because they have bought a lot of crypto, but they only allow the use of their own coins within their countries. So those kind of countries like China and Russia, where it's extremely regular, extreme push, they profit a lot. And so as time goes, they start influencing the rest of the world. And you see, I mean, this is only if like Bitcoin is completely out and regulated, you see fragmentations of countries. So people kind of fragmented in their own communities. They don't want a centralized government anymore. Bavaria, for example, in Germany wants to only be Bavaria.
Flanders wants to be Catalonia, only Catalonia.
Yeah, like why do we need a centralized government? We can do it peer to peer anymore. And this is also, you know, bad if you keep in mind that the last world war was like how much, 70 years ago. So we are always in a state of conflict, right? And if you have a fragmented world and there you have a couple of countries who are extremely centralized, even if people like have disadvantages there, they're definitely going to take action and they're going to influence the rest of the world much more strongly. I think that's actually an extremely good description of why, for example, central governments don't want the wide implementations of crypto, because if I was a government, I also would not want it. It's dangerous, it's potentially dangerous, and it's something very unpredictable what's going to happen in the future. Another very interesting thing is loans. So right now we have a lot of cheap loans, right? People can print out, not the people, but the government can print out money like crazy, so it can afford to give cheap loans. Then there's the problem of if banks become obsolete. So imagine that only peers give loans from, like, in 100 years, you get peer-to-peer loan system, then the loans are going to get much more expensive than right now because it's a deflationary currency. You would be less willing to give out a loan because if you keep your money, it continues to grow in value. And the risk of losing your money becomes bigger in comparison to now. I don't say in absolute terms, but in comparison to an economy that can print out money from nothing and an economy that money is not printed out the way it is right now, the risk is more in the blockchain economy.
I would nuance here, because when you say blockchain and deflationary, I think you're talking about Bitcoin specifically. Bitcoin is a deflationary currency, but not all of them are. So we can imagine a system where a different currency gets created specifically for loans, or we use one of the existing ones.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, that was a stupid formulation on my side. Wait, don't.
No, not stupid. Because there are deflationary currencies. No, it's not. I think there should be a bigger debate about inflation and deflation, because inflation only favors the richest. It just does. What I also don't agree with is if banks become obsolete, that loans would be more difficult to attain. Because don't forget, everybody will be able to loan. Everyone. And not, you don't even have to loan a full amount. You can loan a cent and still get a return. You know,
to be honest, I'm with you on this one. I read it. I'm also extremely critical on this one, because you have different kind of coins. You have also different kind of people who would loan them in a different kind of way. So I'm also with this one that this is a very...
Yeah, I mean, imagine everybody in Africa being able to chip in to provide loans. I mean, there would be more loans to be gained. I mean, I'm using Africa now because there's a lot of countries where banking isn't even a thing for a lot of people, you know?
Because of various
reasons. And so if everybody on the planet Earth can chip in a percent into a percent of a loan, then, I mean, there will never be a more prosperous time to lend, because the lenders are getting their money's worth, because you just have to gain more than the inflation of the currency, and people would be able to get a loan anywhere because the whole world has allocated a portion of their budget to giving out loans.
Loans would be cheaper as well in this
case.
That's true.
There was like a very good experiment in India with microloans. The guy even won a Nobel Prize. I forgot his name. Graham, I think his name was. So loans can definitely... I'm with you on this one, to be honest.
Actually, it's even better, because everybody would compete with everyone, so you would always get the best rates, because literally everyone is competing with literally everyone.
That's what I meant with cheaper rates also for a loan.
Because now banks are supposedly in, you know, there's supposedly some interaction between them, but it's all, you know, the central bank who kind of decides what's happening, and then the banks trying to maximize their profits.
But if
the whole world is lending, then you will have companies that are not maximizing their profits. So yeah, I think it would be a much better world, actually.
I think that's a pretty cool opinion, but I'm actually super curious to hear your opinion about military power and political stability of a country. And in a world that, for example, not the whole world embraces blockchain, how would that impact countries that do in comparison to others that don't?
Me?
Well, both of you.
If I start thinking about it, everything you said would lead to a better future, not a worse one. Because if you have more regional power, then people wouldn't complain about everything, because it's their actions that are shaping everything, you know? So, yeah, maybe you wouldn't have a country anymore. Fine, but nobody has ever said countries were necessary. I mean,
just like if you look at the past, every time you would have decentralized regions, they would always get taken over by a centralized power.
No,
for example, the Ottoman Empire coming in Europe.
No, they're not decentralized. They're not centralized, but it's not the same. because if they are decentralized and everybody owns it, if it's territorial, maybe, yeah, but the people wouldn't use the currency of the country that would have captured them. They would still have their political system because, you know, they own everything. Everything's on the blockchain. It's immutable. So even if the territory they're in is from another country, they can just keep on living their lives as they want.
As long as no soldiers come to tell you otherwise, right? Whatever happens outside of the computer is outside of the computer.
Yes, but you said, and that's the cool thing, you said that if this happens, if there's like this fractioning of countries, then there wouldn't be a military budget anymore.
For the countries that adopt blockchain, but not for the other ones who decide to go for their own centralized currencies.
Yes, but if they have a centralized currency and people lose 2% of their money each year while everybody around them is gaining 2% on their money each year, how long do you think the government would stay in power?
Pretty long, to be honest. That's the system that existed always, right? And they can print out more money.
No, that's not. First of all, it wasn't always like that. And second of all, that's just capitalistic realism. Like the system as it has been today has always been this way. And it is always this way, and it will always be this way because, you know, nature is structured this way, but that's just not true. Now people can't let the best in them come up because they have to spend time working. They have to watch what they're buying and selling. They need to be better than the next one or they just end up in the gutter. But once all that is gone and you have no incentives anymore to beat the person next to you, then that's a whole other ball game. I think, I hope at least that this would bring out the best in people, and I think that's why governments are so afraid, because if people get the chance to do the things like they want them to in a good way, then there's no need anymore. I mean, I'm being overly optimistic because I'm now defending that side, but you know what? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I think it
gets better and better, and then there won't be any centralized governments anymore because, everybody else is having a great time and you're just stuck with this one guy who thinks he's God, you know?
I'm a little bit skeptical, but I would love to hear Stella's opinion on it.
To be honest, I don't think I have anything relevant to add or to bring. I'm just trying to understand your point, Stephen, because for me it's so far from the reality that we live in now that I cannot really imagine it existing. I would tend to see more issues rising from people completely defragmenting themselves from a bigger entity than positive things. But maybe it's because I just haven't given that enough thought or...
Maybe in itself it would be worth like a debate between us, like to properly prepare, because it's also a topic that requires a lot of economic knowledge, a lot of societal knowledge, and political knowledge. And we can research that. So I would be more than glad, for example, just to make a debate and maybe in a couple of months with the right amount of preparation.
Yeah, because like I said, I was overly optimistic. In such a scenario, for example, you need to be able to provide food, security, you know, help, medical help and stuff. And so...
All right. Yeah. I think that's a little bit too much right now because we're also
it's only a minor topic, you know. What's the dystopian future gonna be like of Earth?
I sometimes feel sad because also with the metaverse criminality last time, it's such an interesting topic, and I only feel that sometimes we scratch something, and once we get into the rhythm, I see that we have spoken for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that this deserves a topic on its own, utopian and dystopian perspectives in 100 years. Like, what a question. Damn, it's actually very deep.
All right, people. All right. So, I say we cut it here?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Everybody, thank you so much for watching and listening. Those on the podcast, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe. You rate and review. If you have any suggestions or comments, leave them or go to our website, www.blockchainpractitioners.com, and you can find ways to contact us there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What he said.
And tell us, right, what is your vision of a dystopian or utopian future for blockchain in 100 years?
Yes.
Very curious.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. And
thank
at
you.
The next. See you at the next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao. Thank you for listening to the Blockchain Practitioners podcast, and I hope you learned something new today. If you are involved in an interesting blockchain project, feel free to reach out to us. Also, please like, rate, and review this podcast if possible, and share our content with everybody you think would like it. If you'd like some more information about us, you can visit us on LinkedIn or our website at blockchainpractitioners.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you at the next episode.